You're listening to Pod for Ham, a podcast from The Incomparable that's all about the musical Hamilton, taking it one track at a time through the original Broadway cast recording. Every episode features different groups of interesting people talking about a single track. Visit us on the web at pod4ham.com or follow us on Twitter at pod4ham.
How does Hamilton, an arrogant immigrant orphan bastard whore's son, somehow endorse Thomas Jefferson, his enemy, a man he's despised since the beginning, just to keep me from winning?
Well, welcome once again to Pod for Ham. I'm Lex Friedman. Today we're going to talk about what I would at least consider a turning point in Act 2, where things really start taking a dark turn at this point. Your obedient servant. I'm joined by an all-star panel who will introduce themselves now.
I'm Shannon Sutterth.
I'm David Sparks.
And I'm David J. Lohr.
And since we have two Davids, David Sparks has graciously agreed to be referred to as Sparky. David Lohr has ungraciously not agreed to be referred to as Lori. So we're just going to call him David.
I've been called worse.
As have I.
Now, as I mentioned at the outset, I am Lex. My full first name is Alexander. And my kids really enjoy the fact that Alexander Hamilton and I share a first name. I prefer, you know, living longer than he did, but still. They refer to me sometimes as A.Freed. So I just wanted to get that out there.
Anyway. Nice.
I don't know. I find that pretty offensive. I think you and I need to meet.
I have more than once referred to you as Alexander Friedmanman when singing, you know, because it scans.
Yes, it fits. So I was excited when Jason asked me if I would be on the episode related to this song, because I'm a big fan of this song, although I spend like my whole time yelling at both of them, like, don't do this. There are so many better options. But what are your kind of gut reactions? We'll start with Shannon. What's your kind of gut reaction to this song? How do you feel about it?
Well, gut reaction, as you said earlier, this is a turning point in the song. As you said, we're getting to the thing that we've known was going to happen since the very first song, when Burr points out, I'm the damn fool that shot him. This is where that starts happening. And yet, the song itself is this this three-quarter waltz beat. It's lilty, it's back and it's forth. And, you know, the fact that these two are basically ought to be doing a rap battle towards the point where the bullets fly. And the music is so sing-songy at points, it tips into this circus melody here and there. So it's, for me, it has a really strange place in that, you know, it's, the tone doesn't always fit for me what section of the play it's introducing.
Hey, you know, I said on a prior show, I became obsessed with Hamilton in like the 80s when I was in college, because I just thought he was so fascinating. He was the guy who wasn't born with the silver spoon in his mouth, but he had such an effect on the founding of our country. And at the time, I read these letters between them. And the thing that stood out to me at the time was these guys were murderous towards each other, but they wrote with so much civility towards each other. And that's, I think, why Lynn names the song Your Obedient Servant. So I think the song really gets it right. I mean, because they are ready to kill each other, but they, if you read the letters, it doesn't, like, if Lex and I were writing letters to each other and we were ready to kill each other, they wouldn't be written this way. And I think
trust
song,
him on that.
That song, I mean, we've done it, right, Lex? And they
exactly.
They weren't like that. But the song really does a good job of kind of capturing that weird societal norm around dueling and how the formalities were followed. So I think they really nailed it.
Well, and it is a very, unlike a lot of the songs in the show, it is a very formal, almost an operetta kind of number.
Right.
It is not like, I mean, maybe the closest song to it would be earlier in Act One with the Farmer Refuted, mm-hmm. right? Which is, a very operetta, Gilbert and Sullivan almost. And so, yes, this is very much, you know, we are in the absolute utter high formal manners as we talk to each other. And this is how we communicate now, when before they were, you know, they start off as drinking buddies and they evolve to this point. You know, Burr is the vice president and he should be happy, right? He should be satisfied. And, you know, here's Hamilton again. And, one of the things when I listened to it the first couple of times, and there was just this moment in where Hamilton is singing back to him, where I thought, oh my God, that is such a Leslie Knope thing to do. And when I got the Hamiltome,
yep,
and I'm reading through, and there's, you know, this is my Parks and Recreation moment, where he says, you know, here's an itemized list of 30 years of disagreements. And yes, it's like, oh, Lynn.
Reference acknowledged.
But can I just follow up on that Farmer Refuted point? Because I had the same observation, David. But the thing that's interesting is that Farmer Refuted follows the same tempo, and it's very similar in architecture. The underlying, yes, thing, it's very proper, and like even the beat is very similar. But the difference with Farmer Refuted is Hamilton is thumbing his nose at the system, and he's, right, adding all this extra stuff. He's like, he's showing off. Whereas in this song, he is part of the system. He is completely following the rules that are necessary.
He's just
in order
as
for
formalized,
him.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's doing everything he needs to go murder Aaron Burr.
Now, what I didn't realize when I first heard the song, but I had to kind of very quickly research, was they really did sign their letters this way. Like these, yeah, letters as they were battling, I have the honor to be your obedient servant. What I like when you talk about how they're both clearly being, I don't know if the word is sycophantic, but so fakely polite in these letters as, you know, they do rage on murderously.
Sort of obsequious even. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Nice. They go back and forth between that very kind of circusy waltz melody, but when they do rap, it feels very pointed. It's not like they're not spitting fast rhymes in this, mm-hmm, song, but when Hamilton switches, you know, I've not been shy, I am just a guy in the public eye, like when he switches into that rap mode, like he's still like he's letting his anger slip through in the dictation, even though the letter itself, the language he's using, is still as formal and respectful as possible. But I do just love that line when he says, your grievance is legitimate. It's like, you have every right to be angry because I've called you out for being an endless prick to me. Like, I really, I just enjoy it. No, you're absolutely right. Like, but I'm not sorry.
It's even a little more subtle than that, because I don't know if you've gone this deep in the, you know, rabbit hole, but the initial letter says, you've said something offensive to me. It's not specific. You know, usually these things are very specific. You know, you said such and such to Mr. Friedman on such and such a day. It's not written that way. And Hamilton's first response is, well, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, what are you saying I did? And then, but because he's Hamilton, he eventually starts giving him a list of all the things that he's done against him. You know? And, you know, so at a certain point, the response to the demand becomes a separate offense that requires satisfaction. So the whole thing just kind of spins on itself, but it's so Hamilton, just the way he responds to it.
It is extremely Hamilton. I mean, yes, it's a Parks and Rec reference, but it's also just epitomizes Hamilton for him to turn around and say, you know, here's an itemized list of 30 years of disagreements. And, you know, Burr's, sweet Jesus, because that's what Hamilton does. He writes 95 pages about his affair, explaining why he's still an honorable man because he never speculated. I mean, that's so Hamilton.
My kids take serious umbrage near the end of the song, because there's some theatrical license taken here where they're writing letters back and forth, right? And then Burr's letter is, well, then Stan Alexander, Weehawken, and Dawn. And they're like, well, how could he possibly get that letter in time to know that he should be there at dawn tomorrow? Like, this wasn't an iMessage. This wasn't an email. This is what my 10-year-old said to me. Like, he couldn't have possibly said the day before, let's meet at dawn, because there's no chance he's going to get the letter by then. I'll allow it, but I just want you to know the Friedman children object.
Didn't they have like two or three mail deliveries in those days?
in my head canon, because of course there's head canon.
Of course.
I just assume that, you know, this isn't all the letters that we see or that they actually sent between one another through their lives. I figure, you know, it's just sort of an accepted, here is a date. We're going to meet at dawn to do this because that's what you do.
Right.
So I can let that go, you know.
Although one question I have, and I don't know, I don't recall enough to know this, but the way it's played out here, Burr starts out asking him to set a date, and Hamilton starts just messing with him for a series of letters, you know, 30 years worth of grievances, et cetera, et cetera. And And at the end, Burr just throws up his hands and says, okay, we fucking done. Burr answers his own question. He sets the time and date himself because he's tired of waiting for Hamilton to give him one.
Yep.
Yeah.
The show casts Hamilton as our hero and Burr, as he says later, as the villain in our story. But you can see it from both sides in this song, I think, more clearly than in some of the other songs. There are times when Burr is really painted as villainous. In this song, Hamilton's a jerk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just think in general, Hamilton, if we were dealing with him on a daily basis, would be insufferable. I don't think any of us would want to deal with this guy.
Well, and that's the beauty of this is that, you know, well, I don't know that it's subtext even because they say it pretty clearly, but it is about who lives and dies and tells your story. And so in Hamilton's story, Burr is the villain, but he does get moments throughout to say, remember, this is someone telling this story of this person, and you're not getting all my detail, and you don't know everything about me, and here are my moments to say, you know, here's why I do this, here's why I did that. And, you know, they ring a little hollow because it is Hamilton's story, and it is being told by Hamilton fans.
I always like to contrast the song with the cabinet battles where they're arguing policy and they are going at each other with knives. I mean, I haven't seen the production, but I understand they actually take out mics, mm-hmm. like dueling
yes,
pistols
they do.
Before they start. And this is funny because this goes way beyond policy. This is about we're trying to agree when we're going to meet to shoot guns at each other's heads. And it's so proper. And I don't know, I guess I said this at the beginning, but I just love the tone change for something that's so much more, has so much more gravity towards it.
Yeah. And the staging is very pomp and circumstance, in my opinion, because you've got Burr on the one side and you've got cast member handing him pen and paper so that he may write. And then on the other side of the stage, you've got Hamilton and a different cast member handing it. And then the cast member they keep going back and forth and delivering the letters. And they just get faster and faster. And then all of a sudden, they're both writing at the same time so that at the end, when they sing, take turns, A. Ham, A. Burr, and they're both signing at the same time. It's very seesaw, and it fits the music very well.
And my understanding of history, to answer your earlier question, is that there were runners. There were people mm-hmm. that would deliver messages for you.
That's so how it happened.
Messages oh, could get delivered go. A lot faster than you think.
Chew on that, Friedman kids.
Yeah. Well, if people were closer, you know, obviously if you were in another state, that was another problem. Right. But in the same town, my understanding is that you could get messages delivered relatively easily, pretty quickly.
Yeah. Does anybody know in the history of this, was the duel itself actually scheduled via the letters? Because the letters that I read from, I guess, Wikisource did not show the scheduling of the duels. Does anybody know, was the duel actually scheduled via mail?
Or it may have been through the negotiators if they, you know, after the letters started flying, if they finally brought in their seconds to sort of hash things out.
Right.
When much earlier in the show, when you get to learn the rules of dueling and whatnot, that is a... there's a duel that comes up very kind of, I don't know, aggressively in the moment. And then when Philip gets into a duel of his own, it's again, very much impetuous and in the moment. And this one, if it really does happen over letters, they have so much time to realize, hey, we're being morons and just never take that. This is more in a criticizing the actual history versus the show. But like, if it truly was scheduled via mail where it wasn't that kind of, I'm right here angry at this exact second, so let's schedule it. They had so much time to change their minds and did
yeah,
not.
Yeah, and it's I think actually that reminds me of the PBS special when they were showing Hamilton and all the background in the documentary where Leslie Odom Jr. and Lin-Manuel Miranda got to go to a museum that had most of this correspondence. Right. And here they are, you know, flipping through the actual letters and it's more letters and it's more letters. Yes, they had so many opportunities to let their tempers cool and sit down and figure it out. And they didn't.
At any one point, just one of them just had to write and say, you know what? You're right. I apologize. Right. And, you know, I mean, it's just like, which just tells you, it's just that it must've been so interesting, this relationship these two had.
The staging of this song is pretty interesting. The two actors are on stage. There are, I guess, these human mail delivery services bringing their letters back and forth as they scrawl them out. But it's really the scene in many ways, which I think the lyrics try to do too, but is playing up some of the comic elements of what's going on here. Right, like the itemized list is played as a joke line, and just the way that Hamilton is writing and writing and writing, and then I believe, and Shannon, I don't know if you can correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe that there is a letter that gets delivered to Burr at that time that's like comically long.
Yes.
Like as he gets that one. Like
a sheaf
unfolds,
of pages
unfurls.
Or yes. A scroll. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, like Burr writes a one paragraph and Hamilton writes like 8 pages.
Yes.
With 4 or 5 more reasons to want to kill him in those pages.
I feel like if it's your first time, if you're unfamiliar with the show, I think there are a few attendees who are unfamiliar with at least the story. Like people, I think, at least from the opening number, have a sense of what's going to happen to our hero. But it's interesting to me that even in this moment, which is really leading up to, you know, very painful elements of the show, that Lynn is aiming for a couple of laugh lines and to put some comic relief in here. Because it doesn't feel to me wrong, and so I don't mean this as a criticism. I just find it an unusual choice. I think it's unnecessary. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't offend me or my sensibilities. But I thought it, watching the show live, I felt like, you probably don't even need that. Like, it's okay. We're leading up to bad stuff, and we can just kind of revel in the badness of it if we'd like.
Although I think it's kind of just like our current culture looking at the whole idea of dueling and the formality involved, the whole thing just seems ridiculous. So I think he's playing on that more than anything.
Well, and absolutely. I mean, up until this point, Hamilton had been involved in like 10 other disputes like this that were negotiated away by the seconds, right? But this was the one where they couldn't negotiate it away. And that doesn't really come through in the show because, you know, that's dramatic, just death, right? Just this long protracted negotiation between other people other than your stars. And so, you know, in reality, and he kind of plays it in the song is, you know, well, of course this is going to get negotiated away. We don't have to worry about this. And so I'm going to poke you. I'm going to needle you. Right. Mm-hmm. And Burr is like, no, I just want some kind of satisfaction. And, you know, again, no one is going to be satisfied except the audience.
There's one other thing I want to point out in this song. I believe that we are meant to believe that Burr believes what he believes, but not believe Burr, not agree with Burr. When Burr whines that throughout his life, every failing has been basically due to Hamilton. Like any time that Burr has had a misstep, it's been Hamilton's fault.
It's like, dude, you're vice president.
Right.
Yeah. Get over it.
You became a senator. You are vice president. Get over yourself.
My read, and I'm curious if you guys agree or not, but my read on that moment is that we are indeed meant to think that Burr is wrong about that he's looking through angry, you know, grumpy eyes when he says, every time I failed, it's been because of you and your disrespect of me. Like, I don't take him at his word there. Does anybody, am I alone in that, or is that the common interpretation?
No, I think I mostly agree with that as well, because what we're seeing is Burr, you know, blaming someone else for what he perceives as happening to him, that he's lived his life with this, you know, wait for it attitude, talk less, smile more. And basically, that's what Hamilton's accusing him of being himself.
Yeah.
I mean, Hamilton's not the only ego involved here. Burr at one point wanted himself to be declared emperor of Mexico.
You know, right.
So, yeah. So certainly you've got two, like, imagine a room with, you know, I don't know, two versions of Steve Jobs having a discussion, right? Where, you know, it's these two were special that way, I guess.
If only today we could imagine politicians who were so vague and couldn't be pinned down to anything.
If only.
If only.
I was trying so hard not to compare to modern politics, but it was funny when we were. I believe it was Sparky who was saying earlier that, you know, that Hamilton is basically insufferable. Were he somebody we had to interact with on a daily basis, it'd be very. I was trying to think, who would that be? Because I don't know if there's an obvious modern comparison of whom that person would be. When I was trying to think of like TV comic pundits, I feel like Hamilton is more. this is not a great analogy, so I want to get that out of the way up front. But I feel like he's more John Oliver than John Stewart, in that both are very bright, but that John Oliver is totally content to piss you off, and John Stewart is more inclined, I think, to make you laugh. I think it's a flawed analogy.
And John Stewart will be brief and to the point, whereas John Oliver will go the distance and get granular and yes. drive you nuts with detail. I love it. I watch it every week, but...
Right. But if we're going outside the world of comedy, I don't know if there is even a modern political equivalent of, yeah. of Hamilton.
In the age of the soundbite, how could there be?
Right.
Yeah. 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 Who has an attention span for it these days?
What?
Well, are there other thoughts that you folks want to share on this song?
It's interesting that he refers to Hamilton by his first name.
Yeah, that's a nice contrast that at the beginning, Burr's first letter, Dear Alexander, and then... Alexander responds with Mr. Vice President, as in, hey, remember, you're not president. You could also read into that, given the fact that Burr grew up in a fairly privileged situation, addressing someone else by their first name is a bit of a talk down. So Burr, you could see that as Burr opening up on an aggressive front.
You have to wonder, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
That was a way to push his buttons.
I also have to wonder, you know, we talked about how, you know, we don't buy Burr's defense in this song. I kind of want to smack my head over Hamilton as well, because he's basically pulling a George Eaker. Mm-hmm. You know, George Eaker was basically telling Philip Hamilton, I can't apologize. It's true. And Hamilton's here doing the same thing. I'm not going to apologize for doing what's right. You know, basically everything I'm saying about you is true, at least in my opinion. He will not step down enough to apologize and calm the situation down.
A thing that I hadn't noticed myself, but that I saw on Genius and then recognized as pretty clever, right towards the end of the song, when Burr says, then stand, Alexander, someone observed that it's the same rhythm that Washington uses when he's disciplining Hamilton, mm-hmm. right? When he says,
yes.
Go home, Alexander, yeah. or figure it out, Alexander. And, you know, the Genius contributor says, you know, that might be a coincidence, but it could also be that Burr knows how good Washington was at pushing Hamilton's buttons and is trying to do the same thing there. But I do like that, because it's like the song draws to a brief pause there. Like the beat is kept, but it's, you know, there is a distinct change in tone right at those exact seconds. Then stand, Alexander. And of course, whenever I commute into Manhattan from my home in New Jersey, where indeed everything is legal, I go right by Weehawken and shake my head at these two idiots for their idiocy in agreeing to duel each other every time, every day.
I mean, this is the reason we're talking about this. I mean, if they had resolved it and he had lived a long life, I suspect this musical would not exist.
So the silver lining.
Your words, not mine.
Well, we have now, I think, thoroughly analyzed the song. So let me thank all three panelists, Shannon, David, and David. You can decide which order the Davids were. But thanks so much. And of course, now I guess the next episode is going to cover the World Was Wide Enough. No,
Best
there's
of
one
wives.
In between, right?
Best of Wives, Best of Women.
A very short song. I think of The World Was Wide Enough a lot because it's almost never played in my house. My youngest son does not listen to any songs where people die, so we never get to hear The World Was Wide Enough. Unless I'm in the car. That's when. So anytime I'm driving, you can expect that Hamilton's about to die. Just to be clear.
Because okay. you're driving through Weehawken.
Yes,
that's where we'll have to listen to. Well, thank you all.
You are quite welcome.
As Aaron Burr ended the workshop production, you're welcome.
Mr. Friedman, as always, I remain your obedient servant.
D.Sparks.
I have the honor to be your obedient servant. A.Ham. A.Burr.